Chapter 5. There it is, I whistled as I looked out at the Ashen Island off in the distance. That's where your lost dragons are, ladies.
I'm honestly surprised they stayed so close,
Dalwyn admitted.
Usually when a dragon's bondmate is slain, they try to get as far away from their original homes as possible.
It's really sad, actually.
Kandara frowned.
They just get really sad, almost like they've lost their direction in life altogether.
They kind of have.
Ahuara noted as she pursed her lips and shook her head.
Being bonded with another living soul is the most intimate experience any creature can have. I'm guessing when their bondmate is killed, it's like losing half of yourself to the abyss. I'd go into a depressed state, too.
Though I wanted to remain respectful of the Morpho's mourning words, a sudden idea came into my head, so I slowly walked over to the spot where Sela and Amira were standing and leaned in between them. "Do you think any of your old water dragons could still be alive?" I whispered so only they could hear. Sela and Amira looked at each other skeptically, like I just asked them if they believed in Bigfoot.
"We've talked about this already, Ben,"
Sela reminded me.
"The water dragons fell in battle along with all of our dragonkin men."
"Every single water dragon died in battle," I prompted once more. "Did you ever find their bodies?"
"Well, no,"
Mira admitted.
"The orcs would never leave such a prized possession just lying around on the..."
Suddenly, the jade-haired dragonkin warrior let out a gasp, and her golden eyes widened. Sela, on the other hand, still wasn't getting it.
"So the orcs took the water dragon corpses back to their island?"
she explained.
"So what?"
"What if, and this is kind of a crazy thought," I fully admitted, "what if it wasn't the dead bodies that went back to the Orc Island?"
"My king,"
Sela sighed.
"I must admit I don't understand what you are inferring. We watched the dragons get slain by the orcs."
"We watched them get taken down,"
Mira corrected.
"But that doesn't mean they were dead. The few dragonkin women who took part in the battle retreated as soon as the tide started to turn. But when we came back to the beach later, there were no bodies."
"Oh, you can't be serious,"
Sela argued as she rolled her eyes.
"What interest would the orcs have with a living water dragon, unbonded and in hibernation?"
"A whole lot," I mused. "Think about it for a second. They're obviously trying to figure out how to make these creatures bond again, presumably with them. If that wasn't their endgame, there's no way they'd be on the Isle of the Dragons in the first place."
You think our old dragons might still be alive then?"
The dragonkin woman's green eyes grew wide. "Might is the key word there," I said matter-of-factly. "Knowing how twisted the fucking orcs are, they could have killed the water dragons, or subjugated them to all sorts of fucked-up experiments trying to make them bond again. But yes, it sounds like that could be a possibility." My mind raced at the thought of potentially adding even more firepower to our repertoire. We already had a fire-breathing dragon and 4 powerful, loyal water dragons. If Jonas's ceremony worked as well as he claimed it would, then we would be adding a bunch of full-grown fire-breathers to our team, too. And if it worked on those dragons, I was assuming it could work on any water dragons we found along the way as well. If we played our cards right, I could become the Draco Rex in much more than name only. However, first things had to be first. We needed to find these sleeping dragons before the orcs got to them, and we had to see if Jonas's ancient ceremony would even work.
"Oh no,"
Ahuara's voice called back from the front of the ship.
"It looks like those evil creatures you were talking about have already found their way here."
I dashed back over to the crowd of Morphos at the edge of the ship and then looked out over the horizon. Sure enough, I could see several ship-shaped silhouettes lined up along the closest edge of the island. "Shit," I grumbled under my breath. "We need to head west, and in a hurry."
"Why?"
Elzara asked with wonder-filled brown eyes.
"Don't we need to be going to the same island?"
"We do," I admitted. "But trying to sail through a whole fleet of orc ships to get there would be suicide. As much as I hate to say it, we're going to have to go around to the other side of the island and then approach the volcano that way."
"But we don't know what's on the other side of the island,"
Gemma gasped and put her hand against her chest.
"For all we know, there could be dangerous beasts or perilous traps or it's just, it's completely uncharted territory."
"I know it is," I reassured the Nyarlathotep woman. The thing is, though, we know what's waiting for us on this side of the island. Orcs. Lots of them, with enough firepower to blow us out of the water before we could even sink one of their ships. It might be risky, but I'd much rather take my chances with the unknown.
I'm inclined to agree with Ben.
Dalwyn nodded her bright yellow head.
Once we have bonded with our old mates' dragons, we will be able to make short work of that entire fleet. Until then, I think it would be wise to avoid a direct confrontation. Oh.
Nadir grumbled from her position below the nearby mast.
I was really itching for another battle. Killing a bunch of scuttling beasts isn't anywhere near as satisfying as crushing an orc skull underneath my axe.
All the Morpho women looked at Nadir in wide-eyed horror. The Kunag leader, however, just stared off at the distant ships with disappointment plastered on her beautiful face.
This one has quite the taste for violence, doesn't she?
Dalwyn whispered and pointed to Nadir.
Oh, they both do.
Ahuara agreed, and then motioned between Lazan and Nadir.
You should have seen them during the battle with the Morpho men. I don't think I've ever seen anybody experience pure, raw joy like these two did when they were fighting. I saw them crush one of the men's jaws with their battle axe.
The often silent Zarandri whispered.
It was actually pretty interesting.
Having fun on the job is great and all, I reminded them. But enthusiasm is no match for iron and cannonballs. I just hope those jolly green bastards haven't seen us yet. I stopped away from the pack of women as I ran toward the wheel.
Do you need me on the sails?
Mira asked as she seated her spot. You're my best crewman, I confirmed. I need somebody like you commanding the sails if we want to get out of the orc's sightline quickly. The golden-scaled dragonkin woman gave me a nod as she stepped away from the wheel, and I swiftly stepped into her spot, took the reins, and then watched as she ran off toward the main mast of the Dragon Queen.
Stand by to brace!
Mira commanded as she bounded across the deck.
We're about to take a sharp left!
I watched as Gemma left the Morphos and ran back to her position as well. At the same time, the butterfly women all panically grabbed onto anything they could possibly hold and prepared for the sudden movement. Eric and Jonas both wrapped their arms around Malky's trunk-like legs, and the water dragon himself planted his feet firmly into the wood of the deck. Then the Kunag women dug one handful of claws into the mast and held on with a grip of iron. I spun the wheel to the right like I was playing roulette, and the entire schooner began to turn in the opposite direction. The sudden shift in momentum caused anything that wasn't secured down to slide across the deck, and soon there were bits and pieces of parasite legs scattered before me. I thought I said to put those in a barrel or something! I laughed and shifted my weight to keep myself from moving.
We did!
Elzara protested through a fearful scream.
We just didn't have any way to secure the barrel!
The wood of the ship groaned as she lurched to the left and spun around in the water like a spinning top. Up above, the ropes rattled against the mast, and I started to worry we might have been putting too much stress on their threads. The sails shook from the sudden change in direction as well, and for a brief second, I swore we were being blown sideways by the draft of the crosswinds. Then I slowed my turning wheel down into a crawl, and eventually got the Dragon Queen stabilized. Once we were no longer in motion, I set us on a course to the west, and we floated off against the waves in a rush. My body felt like it was on pins and needles for the next 30 minutes or so, as my brain raced with the thoughts of what would happen if those fuckers saw us. Sure, our vessel was faster than any of their larger ships, but all it would take was one well-aimed cannonball to blow us out of the water. Then, there was the fact that they easily outnumbered us, probably at least 100 to 1. If they caught us, we were finished. Thankfully, we must have slipped past them, because after 30 or 40 minutes of tense, silent sailing, the ships disappeared as the island put them out of our view. I let out a deep breath and slumped down against the ship's wheel. Holy fuck, I sighed. I think we may have just pulled off the greatest stealth escape since Mission Impossible.
Are you sure they didn't see us?
Gemma asked once more. I don't think so, I said, though I was now second-guessing myself. Or at least if they did, they're not coming after us.
Not coming after us yet,
Sela clarified.
It would probably still be wise to try and keep a low profile until our mission is completed.
Sela, I chuckled at the beautiful warrior. You will hear no objections from me on that one. We sailed along the outer perimeter of the Isle of the Dragons until we finally saw another beach off in the distance, and then I turned the Dragon Queen toward the shore and headed inland. Once we got about half a mile out from the shore, I barked out the command to hoist the sails and to drop the anchor. Nadir, Lazan, and Mira all instantly ran over to the capstan, grabbed onto one of its handles, and then started to walk in a clockwise direction. The chains inside the device clinked loudly as the heavy hunk of metal was lowered into the ocean, and once it was down far enough, gravity took over. All three of the women leapt backward as the capstan spun wildly, and then there was a muted thunk as the anchor hit the ground. "All right, everyone," I announced as I stepped away from my spot behind the wheel. "We need to get to the beach and try to set up a camp of some sort."
"A camp?"
Sela questioned.
"I thought we were headed to the volcano at the center of the island."
"We will," I promised the Dragonkin warrior. "But first we need to make sure we have enough provisions to make it back home. I don't want to alarm anyone, but..."
"That's never a good but,"
Mira sighed. "It's not," I admitted. "We don't have enough provisions to last us more than a day or two, unless we completely ration them to the point where we'll be on the cusp of starvation. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I really don't want to do that, especially since some of you are pregnant. So the first thing we need to do is to catch some food and stock up the barrels we've depleted. I'd imagine that'll take a little bit to do, and I don't want to be caught out here without any protection when night finally falls."
"It's probably for the better," Jonas said as he entered the conversation. "I will need to fine-tune my skills for the ceremony, and that might take some time as well."
"See?" I chuckled and gestured to the soothsayer. "It'll work out best for everybody. Now let's grab a couple of barrels and then float them out to the beach." Now that we were locked into place, I took a few of my crewmates and wandered down into the lower part of the ship. We grabbed 3 empty oaken barrels, brought them over to the main ladder, and then hoisted them up with our combined strength. Once they were high enough, Malky's triangular head poked down into the opening, snatched up the barrel in his jaws, and then lifted it the rest of the way out. We repeated the action with each of the containers before we climbed back up to the top deck.
"Do we really have to swim to the shore?"
Nadir asked as she looked over the side of the boat, and her striped tail was flicking back and forth behind her body, like a cat infatuated with a laser pointer. I couldn't tell if she was excited or nervous, but I could see the Kunag leader was most definitely high-strung at the moment. "I figured Malky and Tyrion would take some of us on their backs," I explained. "The rest of us can swim up and pull the barrels to shore."
"Or fly,"
Dalwyn announced to her underlings.
"How heavy are those barrels? Because I think we might be able to carry them if we used our combined strength."
The yellow-haired queen was being genuine, so I tried my damnedest not to laugh. All of these Morpho women were extremely petite, some so much so that they were to the point of frailty. The thought of the slim beauties carrying a heavy oak barrel while they flew through the sky was quite the prospect. "It'll be much easier to float them," I reassured the royal Morpho. "Trust me, it's better to just let gravity do all the heavy lifting for you. Tell you what, you guys all go ahead up to the beach and try to find a camping spot. Somewhere out of the reach of the high tide, but not so close to the forest that we'll have to worry about burning it down again."
"We'll do our best, Draco Rex,"
Ahuara confirmed as she stepped forward. The next thing I knew, all of the Morphos began to flap their wings and lifted up into the sky. Next, the herd of butterfly women fluttered off the deck of the ship and giggled as they headed toward the white sands of the beach. Their wings created the illusion of a waving rainbow. And for a brief second, I was so struck by their beauty, I forgot all about the problems at hand. However, an impatient chuff from Malky brought me back to reality. "Okay," I shook my head to break the trance. "Let's get these barrels down into the water. Now if we use the ropes, we can..." In one swift motion, Malky and Tyrion took a barrel in their jaws and then flung them overboard. I raised my finger to protest, but they didn't seem to mind as they repeated the action with the second set of containers.
"Ha ha ha ha! Last one in the ocean's rotten boar meat!"
Eric cackled as he made a running start toward the port side of the ship. I watched with the angst of a parent as my son jumped up into the air, pulled his knees into his chest, and then disappeared over the side of the Dragon Queen. When I heard the splash that told me Eric was okay, I released my tension in my body and shook my head.
Well, I chuckled. I guess that's one way to get them down there.
What is it you always say?
Tyrion laughed.
Smarter, not harder.
Smarter, not harder. I repeated with a half-smirk.
Jord the Dragon Prince.
Mira teased Sela.
The last one into the water is rotten boar meat, and it's not gonna be me.
Sela's eyes narrowed in response, and then both of the Dragonkin warriors took off like bats out of hell. Their hands playfully sparred with each other as they ran, like two football players trying to beat each other to get open. Then, once they were within striking distance, they both cartwheeled over the side of the ship and hit the water with a loud splash.
I'm definitely not jumping overboard like that.
Gemma frowned as she laid a hand on her pregnant belly.
Not with our little boy, anyways.
No problem, Gemma.
Tyrion announced as he flew over to the Nerelope.
You know you can always count on your trusty bondmate to save the day.
Thank you, Tyrion.
The auburn-haired beauty giggled. Tyrion hovered down low to the ground and then bowed his neck so Gemma could climb aboard. The Nerelope woman tossed her leg over her dragon's neck, hoisted herself up, and then sat down between his shoulder blades as she planted her feet firmly into his sides. Finally, once she was secure, Tyrion zipped back up into the air and shot across the horizon like he'd been fired out of a cannon.
Do they want a ride too?
Malky asked as he gestured to Lazan and Adir. Malky wants to know if you two want to ride on his back. I translated to Lazan and Nadir.
Well, I mean, if you're offering.
Lazan cleared her throat. The multicolored-haired Kunag woman was trying to sound carefree and nonchalant, but I could hear a hint of fear in her voice. I knew the Kunag didn't really care for water and weren't strong swimmers, but we weren't that far from the land. Then again, maybe our little encounter with the giant parasites and Sanshula rattled the feisty raccoon women more than I thought. Either way, the two women didn't seem to want to swim to shore on their own, so they scurried over to Malky, hopped up onto his back, and then held on for dear life. The copper-scaled water dragon then lumbered over to the edge of the boat, peered out over the side, and squatted down as he prepared for the next step. Malky let out a happy chuff as he jumped over the side of the boat, and his sounds of happiness were instantly drowned out by the excited screams of the Kunag women. It was like they were riding a living, breathing roller coaster. Malky and the women hit the water with a powerful splash that sent a geyser of water sloshing up onto the deck, but then all was well. Looks like it's just you and me, Jonas, I chuckled to the soothsayer as we both walked over to the port side of our vessel. Down below, Malky was using his broad, scaly shoulders to push two floating barrels. Mira and Sela sat atop the other two and paddled them forward with their hands like a makeshift raft. Meanwhile, Arik was swimming through the ocean like a scale-covered Michael Phelps. The boy's thin frame, combined with the aerodynamic design of his scales, helped him dart through the water faster than any human I'd ever seen. I guess it made sense, though. He was part dragon, after all.
After you, Draco Rex.
Jonas stepped back and held out his hand to let me pass.
My old bones can't handle the impact from a dive like that, so I'll be taking the ladder.
You sure? I prodded the old man.
It'd be fun. As fun as it might be, Jonas chuckled. My body certainly won't find it fun when I wake up tomorrow, aching all over. I'll take my chances with the ladder.
Suit yourself, I shrugged. I stepped back a few paces, dug my feet into the wooden deck, and then ran forward. I sprang into the air and went over the side head first, so I clapped my hands together above my head like an Olympic diver. The briny air whipped against my face as I plummeted down into the water. And the next thing I knew, I was swallowed up by the crystal blue ocean. The water was cold against my skin, and I sank several feet down before I was able to catch myself and then paddle back to the surface. My head broke through the top, and I took a deep gulp as air filled my aching lungs. Then I glanced back at the ship to see Jonas's frail old body descending the ladder, and it took him nearly 5 minutes to reach the water. Once everybody was present and accounted for, we headed for the shore, and we arrived in no time flat to find that Gemma, Tyrion, and the Morphos had already begun to establish a spot for us to make camp.
My crew rolled the barrels up onto the sands of the Isle of the Dragons, and then left them near the water as we approached our friends.
"This looks like as good of a spot as any,"
Gemma announced when she saw us.
"It's got some shade, and it's pretty far up the beach, so we shouldn't have to worry about the tide washing us away. Now, if there are any creatures out there in the night, though..."
"I wouldn't worry about them," I reassured the Nerolope. "We're going to make sure we're so well hidden, a bloodhound couldn't find us."
"How will we do that?"
Awara asked.
"Do you want us to build a hanging village in the trees?"
"Don't be ridiculous, Awara,"
Dalwyn scoffed.
"Look at these things. They don't even have leaves, and they're so tiny compared to the ones on our island."
"Seriously?"
Alara whistled as she looked over one of the white-barked trees.
"How does anybody live in these?"
"Most people don't," I explained.
"And if they do, they have to create intricate systems of platforms,"
Gemma added.
"It's what my people did, and it was the only way to keep from falling down and injuring ourselves."
"Besides," I continued, "we're not building a shelter above ground."
"Where else could we build one?"
The young, innocent Elzara quirked her head to the side.
"Oh!"
Nadir gasped, and a devilish grin spread across her face.
"Are we going subterranean again? We haven't done that since we were back on Kunag Island."
"That's the idea," I smiled at the raven-haired beauty. "We're going to dig ourselves a shelter in the sand and then cover it up with foliage. That way, if any orcs come across it while we're asleep, they won't even know it's here."
"Will that work?"
Sela asked. And the blue-haired woman sounded skeptical.
"If we dig into the sand, won't the shelter be unstable?"
"We're not digging into the sand," I tried to explain to the dragonkin warrior. "We're making camp along the tree line. The soil is a bit more stable over there. And once we reinforce it with some thick sticks, our shelter will be golden. So now, the question remains, who wants to start digging, and who wants to go fishing?"
"I'll dig,"
Malky offered.
"You know how much I love playing around in the dirt."
"Good idea," I winked at the water dragon. "Having a big guy like you will make it go way faster."
"I want to help Malky,"
Eric said as he stepped forward and lifted his chin.
"I'll assist with the digging as well,"
Nadir agreed.
"I don't really care for fishing anyways. If I want to eat a fish, I'm just going to snatch it up right out of the water and eat it right then and there, you know?"
"I want to fish?"
Zarandri half-stated, half-asked.
"Then go fishing,"
Queen Dalwyn smiled.
"Elzara and I will stay behind to assist with the digging."
"I'll come along,"
Alara noted.
"I want to show you guys how we catch fish the Morphle way."
"I thought you just ate berries and nuts and grubs,"
Mira asked with a raised eyebrow.
"That's what's readily available to us,"
Alara explained.
"We occasionally have to catch our food, but that's only when it's the off-season for our other goodies."
"That's gonna change when you come back to the Dragonkin Island,"
Mira chuckled.
"I swear we eat wild boar at least once a day in some form or another."
"That's because they're everywhere,"
Gemma smiled.
"I swear I'd never seen such a bountiful hunt until Ben took me to his island."
"That's not a high bar,"
Sela snorted.
"Your people didn't even hunt until Ben came around."
"Exactly,"
the auburn-haired Nerolope agreed.
"As much as I'd love to join either of you on your endeavor to do chores," Jonas's voice interjected, "I really need to practice some more. If we really are intending to do this ceremony tomorrow, I want to make sure I am prepared beyond a reasonable doubt, rather than just highly optimistic."
"I won't argue with that," I nodded. "Will it be safe to practice this close to the actual dragons, though? We're not going to, like, accidentally start it for real, will we?"
"Of course not," the soothsayer reassured me. "Though I'll be thinking the incantations in my head, there's no way I would be careless enough to say them aloud. The last thing we need is a fractured ceremony."
"You can say that again," I agreed before I looked back at the rest of the crew. "All right then. On that note, if you're coming fishing with me, let's head on down to the beach. Everybody else, find a safe spot along the trees and start digging."
"So, do we just start digging with our hands?"
Eric questioned. "Yep, just dig out a spot that's large enough for all of us to fit in," I explained to my son. "Honestly, it doesn't even have to be that deep, just as long as we can all lay down in it when we want to sleep."
"Digging a giant hole in the ground,"
Malky chuckled.
That should be easy.
I left my crew to their work, and then headed down to the shoreline. And Gemma, Tyrion, Lazan, Mira, Ahuara, Halara, and Zarandri followed me down to the spot where we set up the barrels before we all waded out into the water and searched for anything we could possibly eat.
Maybe things work differently in your world?
Ahuara noted as she looked over the barrels.
But on our island, our food would go bad if we stored it for too long. We were always taught that if we were lucky enough to catch fresh meat, we had to consume it immediately.
Yes, the laws of science still apply to my old world. I winked with a hint of snark. However, my world had invented plenty of ways to get around that issue.
Are you talking about that strange box that keeps things cool?
Mira's eyes lit up at the thought.
I always love it when you talk about those.
As much as I'd love to have a fridge right now, I chuckled. That's not going to happen. Unless one of you somehow invented electricity while we were away. No. I'm talking about salting the meat.
Is that what all the white grains are inside the barrels?
Gemma pondered aloud with a tilt of her head.
I thought they might have been books.
What? Ugh, no, I gagged. No! The salt actually prevents the bugs and the bacteria from getting inside.
This salt sounds really useful,
Halara said with an excited grin.
Where do we find it?
Without missing a beat, I gestured wildly at the ocean around us. It's right here, I explained. All you have to do is take the water from the ocean and then boil it long enough and it'll turn into salt.
Do you know that strange but tasty sensation you get on your tongue when you swallow ocean water?
Mira continued.
That salt is a blessing from the goddess Ocean, and thanks to Ben, the Dragonkin people have discovered its many uses.
How much do we need?
Ahuara interjected.
Shouldn't we be hauling back seawater to the beach? Are either of you going to ask what boiling is?
Zarandri's soft voice whispered to the two morphos. Wait. I blinked rapidly at her words. Do you not know how to boil something? How do you cook your meat?
Dragon fire.
Ahuara shrugged.
It was the only fire we could keep going on our island.
We'd shove whatever we wanted to cook on a stick, hold it up in front of the dragon, and then let them breathe onto it.
Halara added.
What did you do when the dragons were away?
Mira questioned.
I thought you said the dragons were only around once a year, when your mates came back to the island.
If there were no dragons, we didn't eat meat.
Ahuara sighed.
Couldn't you just have started the fire yourself?
Gemma's eyes narrowed as the words slipped out from her mouth.
We never learned how.
The orange-haired pixie admitted.
It was a useless skill anyways, considering it rained on our island daily. It was never dry enough to start a fire.
I know what you're thinking.
Halara interjected before I could even say anything.
You're probably wondering why we didn't just build a fire inside one of the houses, sheltered away from the rain?
The thought crossed my mind. I chuckled.
We made that mistake once.
Zarandri giggled like a mouse.
Elzara brought in a skewer of nuts while it was still on fire. It burned down the whole dwelling.
Poor girl.
Halara laughed as she slapped her friend right above her yellow wings.
I thought Elzara was going to die from panic when that happened.
It was almost like she forgot our homes were destroyed on the regular.
Ahuara shook her head with a smile. So, you've never had to boil water before? I asked, still in disbelief. How did you get clean drinking water?
The rain.
Ahuara frowned and raised her eyebrows.
We drink the rain.
I suppose that made sense. Unlike back in my world, the rain on these islands was much purer, not filled with all the pollutants and chemicals that occurred in the areas where I'd lived. Well, either way, I'm about to show you how, I explained to the Morpho women. Once our friends back on shore get a shelter going, we'll gather up some water and put on a little boiling show for you all.
If we have fish to salt,
Gemma reminded us.
We haven't really seen anything swimming around us yet. We probably need to go deeper.
Lazan grumbled with a shudder. As much as I knew Lazan didn't like the water, I knew she was right. If we wanted to have a chance to catch any sort of fish, we were going to have to wade out into the deeper waters. I just hoped there was nothing else out there waiting for us.